dark shape cringing in the sun-spattered window was in fact a cat, and the cat was but one creature among many in the public display. The Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals sought thus to interest the general public in adopting homeless animals, because 12 million of them are put to death in shelters and by community authorities each year in the United States. But anyway, whereas most of the animals in this SPCA display in the park were puppies and kittens, adorable, full of potential, therefore more adoptable, the one cowering feline that had for some reason caught Melissa's eye was fully grown, and worse, she was a mess. Her fur was matted and dull, pale skin shone through in several bald spots. "I hope you find a home," Melissa told the disheveled little creature, and then she went on her way. But all of the rest of that sunny afternoon, Melissa could not stop thinking about that cat. Yes, she was bedraggled, apparently not very friendly, but then Melissa considered how she would feel sitting in a cage, ogled by noisy strangers, and she remembered that her own hair was not always groomed to perfection. So later, Melissa returned to the park to see if the mangy black cat had been adopted. Instead, she found only impressions in the grass where the SPCA cages had stood. There was a man standing at a park bench nearby. Melissa asked him what had happened, and predictably every kitten had been petted and played with and eventually became somebody else's companion animal. But, he said, the black cat with the bald spots was returned to the shelter, perhaps to die. Suddenly anxious now, Melissa ran home, began making phone calls. The last one led to the almost forever lost feline. And before night fell, Melissa Millick was what she had never imagined herself becoming, the owner of a cat. And to honor the extraordinary day that the unkempt kitty came to stay, Melissa named her Wednesday. And after a little while of love and care, Wednesday's bald spots disappeared, and the dingy coat became smooth and lustrous. Daytimes, Wednesday slept on the couch with one paw shading the sunlight from her eyes. At night, she curled up next to Melissa with her head also on the pillow. If there is a moral to this story, it's a very simple one, really, that potential is not always the province of kittens. For one night, not many years ago, outside the door of a tiny one-room bungalow in Los Angeles, a ski-masked stranger dressed in black stood trying to pick the lock. And a soundly sleeping woman on the inside of that house, who might have become his victim, was instead awakened and alerted by her roommate. The roommate, running in frantic circles as never before around her bed, thus made her aware of the lurking danger, and she screamed and promptly summoned police, and the stranger fled. Oh yes, you've met the sleeping woman, Melissa Millick, and you've met her roommate, the once bedraggled little black cat named Wednesday. Only now, should you ever ponder the crime that never quite happened, I hope you'll recall a springtime afternoon in the park when a tattered, tousled little orphan was cringing in its cage. Because now, you know the rest of the story.
This hour of Sound Off on KPRL brought to you by Buy the Book Heating and Air, your local reliable heating and air expert. Call 805-423-5119.
238-5775. 238-KPRL. Sound Off continues on KPRL, the North County's number one choice for news, talk, and sports. This is Sound Off on The Right Choice, KPRL.
Okay, we're back, and the phone lines are open. 238-5775, give me a call. Now, I told you in the first half hour that I asked you what is black and brown and looks good on lawyers. I didn't get any calls, so I have to guess. I guess nobody either cared or nobody knows. And the answer is really quite simple. What's black and brown looks good on lawyers? Dobermans. Doberman pinschers, more than better. Anyway, so that being said, no laughter in the background. I was talking about Harris. She keeps calling Trump names, calling him fascist, dictator, authoritarian. But she wanted to pass a bill called the Do No Harm Act in 2018. And basically turns a First Amendment guarantee of religious freedom on its head. She wants to have abortion on demand and in areas or levels seen only in countries like North Korea and China. That puts us in really great company, doesn't it? Communist China and communist North Korea. And that's how liberal our abortion laws would be. And make that mandatory in every single state. You'd have no exceptions, none, for doctors or hospitals that object to performing abortions, like Catholic hospitals. There's over 600 Catholic hospitals in the United States, and the Catholic Church very strongly opposes abortion. And it lets its elected officials who are Catholics know that too, even though they ignore it. And Harris basically skipped the Al Smith dinner this week. And when she was at a rally recently, he had some pro-life kids go out there and say Jesus is Lord. She mocked them. You're at the wrong rally. You need to be someplace else. You know, but that's who she really is. That's who Kamala Harris really is. You know, she hates Christians. She hates Catholics in particular because they get in her way. What did Trump do, by contrast? Now, he's modified his position somewhat. A lot of pro-life people don't like it, but he said he's going to remain hands-off. He said he would veto a federal ban on abortion. Now, a lot of people won't like that, but I would think that's probably a good thing to do. I think the whole purpose of overturning Roe versus Wade, turning it back to states, letting the people decide what they want to do, and the rest of us who are pro-life are going to have to stop looking to legislation and start working on persuasion. Persuading women not to do this, persuading young men not to put young women in this position in the first place. Getting back to some very conservative, fundamentally moral values that, you know, premarital sex, sex outside of marriage is not a good idea for a very good reason, because girls pay the price. Inevitably, young women pay the price. We have a caller. Let's go to the phones. Hi, you're on the air. Hello?
Hello?
Hello? Yeah, you're on the air.
Oh, hi there. I just saw a blurb that they don't expect to have final counts for the election in Arizona, Maricopa County for 2 weeks. So election cycle is probably going to drag out. I think the media is in control of everything now because they just want, you know, everyone on the edge of their seat for as long as possible.
That's depressing. I was hoping we'd have some news, at least by Friday. Maybe Arizona and Nevada won't make that much difference.
Yeah, I know. Well, really that's the hope, right, is that, yeah, that there's enough states that swing, you know, from the East Coast that, like you said, Arizona doesn't make much of a difference. But it is sad that our election has evolved into something that is no longer effective. I mean, I remember growing up, is you would know, you know, I mean, there might have been one or two states that had some issues, but now it's like almost all states can't come up with a reasonable count because of all these mail-in ballots and stuff.
Yeah, well, the ballot, you know, has to be postmarked the day of the election and doesn't get there for another week, and then they have to count them. That's why things get really slow. That's why we've been encouraging people
And it's funny because it certain states will count or say that it has to be in by election day, and I don't know what the Constitution specifically says, but it sure seems like it's been, you know, mushed around and grayed out because it's not. Oh. You know, the intent is lost. Right?
Well,
you have a day where you go, everyone votes, and you figure it out. No. Now it's like I said, a cycle or a season.
Yeah. So. It's election season, and the Constitution lets states basically run the elections. That's the thing. It's pretty much up to states how they want to do it. So we got 50 states, 4 territories with their own sets of laws and how they run their elections, with minor exceptions for federal elections, but still they pretty much run the show.
Yeah.
And I guess
the certification, and there's dates that, you know, are a month and a half or whatever after the actual, you know, stated election day. So I guess they can get away with it, but it just seems kind of ridiculous in our day and time when you can, you know, do things instantaneously.
Right. You know, we're used to getting instantaneous results, and, you know, we've gone from, well, it used to be like this. Just when you get the president elected, he wouldn't know for 6 weeks because you have to count all the ballots, get the information, because you're traveling by horse. You know, we've got, you know, light speed of light communications, and we're, you know, election results coming in at the speed of a horse or a man walking. So we're back in horse and buggy days for elections. Anyway, well, thanks for your call. I got another caller coming in. I'm going to try to take him, but thank you. Hi, you're on the air.
Yes, Al. Good talking to you.
Sure.
I'm calling to hope to give a little bit of wisdom and warning in the election cycle that we're in right now. From that little black book that the book banners have banned from our schools, called the Bible. And it's interesting when, and it happened over taxes, actually, when the lower tribes and the upper tribes of Israel separated on their own accord. The northern tribes became judged by God, the God of the Bible, first, and we can learn a lot from what happened there. They had good kings and bad kings, mostly bad kings, and God decided to put an end to their debauchery. What was interesting to me, and in regard to our elections now, is the two gods that they were worshiping, the two false gods that they were worshiping. One was Baal or Melech, and that god was a heated piece of brass, a big statue, that held out its hands, and they put their live children in the hands of that idol and watched it be sizzled to death. We've got abortion now. The other thing was the Asherah pole that came out of a foreign tribe, not an Israeli tribe, and their thing was free sex and all that, and they would have big orgies around this pole where male and female prostitutes would display their works and do their work. It seems like since the 60s, which is when I started growing up, we've gone to a free sex situation, and then we try to cover it by killing the babies from it. And the warning to Israel, that upper tribes, was that he was going to bring down the Syrians and wipe them out. He did it. Do we stand on the precipice of that as a country, as we turn our backs to God and are going to going into an election where one person stands for the rule of law and our Constitution that was made by godly men, and a woman that proclaims abortion and sexual perversion as her major platform and higher taxes? Pretty interesting to me.
It is. It is interesting. And I'm very worried about what you talk about, you know, if there is God and there is a just God in the universe, how can he look at a country that mutilates children, not just kills them in the womb, but mutilates children, and pretends that somehow you can take a 3-year-old or a 5-year-old, and they're going to know what their gender is going to be when they're an adult, and start chemically castrating little boys and mutilating little girls as they go into puberty and things like that, and saying, oh, this is a good thing, and parents that object run the risk of having their children forcibly removed from the home and put into an environment where somebody else will do this. Not to mention the fact that if doctors and hospitals are willing to even do this, what happened to the Hippocratic Oath? That's where we're at as a country. And then, of course, we have Kamala Harris's position on Israel. And you want to know the thermometer and the thermostat on, you know, God's position vis-a-vis America, you know, how do we relate to Israel and as a nation? And it just says very clearly, I will bless them that bless thee and curse them that curse thee. And we were the first nation to recognize Israel as a state. We have been their ally since they've been there. We don't always get along on certain issues, but the bottom line is they are a nation that has been a people who have been greatly wrong throughout history. They have that's their ancient homeland. It goes back 4,000 years. They were there before the Arabs were, contrary to a lot of left-wing propaganda that's out there. They actually were there before the people came in, the Philistines, which were people from across the Mediterranean, came in by 150 years. So that's been their ancient homeland. You can read Mark Twain's Roughing It, passing there, and it talks about how Israel was there, what it was like to be in Palestine in the 1860s when he visited. And virtually empty, forlorn place. The Jews came back and they basically bought the land from the landlords that owned the land, and they paid fair prices for it. And that's where they've been. They were offered Uganda, by the way, and by rehearsal was offered that by the British government. We'll give you Uganda if you want to go someplace. And the Jews said no. They said, we want to go back to our ancient homeland, go back to Jerusalem as our capital. And they've done that. And there's one fulfilled prophecy after another. But anyway, if you want to know how the United States will fare under a Harris administration, I don't think Israel will fare very well. And I don't think things will be particularly great in the United States. All the bad things that she's proposing to do, and the fact that the Democratic Party has been the party of weakness, they basically abandon one ally after another. They did it in Vietnam. They did it in Korea, too, basically. But Vietnam, then you did Iraq, then you did Afghanistan. That's what these people do. They retreat and defeat. It's been the the menu that we've been served by them for the last 50 years. And American power is in decline facing in the face of rising national security threats from China, Russia, North Korea. North Korea and Russia just signed a mutual defense pact this week. That should be a very scary thing to people. And China is arming to the teeth, and we don't have the ability to build our system, our weapon systems back up. So anyway,
well,
I talked too much.
We are not going to be the savior of Israel, for one thing. And the tribes, all of the tribes that are now again established, the moon god, which is the god of Islam, was one of the false gods that was worshipped even before Abraham was chosen by God to do what he did and bring some kind of sanity to the land. But what's interesting is that in prophecy, Israel will not be removed again, period.
Right.
And if prophecy is not correct, then they will. If prophecy is correct, then they won't. And God is the one that will come and defend them. What's interesting is that all of the nations used to think that everything was coming out of Europe. All the nations that are coming against Israel are all Islamic, which is anti-Bible, anti-God, a revision of the Bible that we know that came along in the 6th century. It's nothing new. It's been there for ages and ages. And God took Abraham into that land to get rid of it. It's on the rebound and coming back. And all of those tribes, there's four horses that come in one of the judgments, and the colors of those horses were white, black, red, and green. Those are the colors of the flags of the countries that are all coming against Israel. So bottom line, I'm not worried about Israel, although they'll pay a mighty price. I'm worried at this point about our country, who, like you say, has turned its in process of turning its back on Israel. And again, we've got one man running for president that is for Israel and would back Israel and would be on Israel's side, whether we're involved in a war over there or not. And we've got a person that will definitely turn her back on Israel, and that will cause a judgment on the United States.
I think
thank
so.
You for your time.
Thank you. Well, what I hear from people, and I tell people who say, well, I can't vote for either one. I don't like Trump. I think he's not a Christian, whatever. And he's not. I don't believe he is. But I say, well, you got one candidate that's probably a non-Christian. You got another candidate that's an anti-Christian, vehemently anti-Christian, and should be voting for policies, not persons. And Trump's policies would be probably the best economically, and national defense policies for the United States across the board, best for freedom, constitutional law. And her policies, based on what she has said, she is the most far-left radical Democrat in the United States Senate than anybody can remember, more left than Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren combined. I believe what she said. I think she believes what she said. She was raised by a father who was a Marxist. She was raised outside the United States in socialist environments. She was raised in an upper middle class or lower upper class environment, a life of privilege growing up, not this working class nonsense that she keeps coming up with. She hasn't got a clue what people actually go through growing up. I think she thinks she's entitled to that, and I think she holds the rest of the people in contempt. She is very anti-Christian and everything else. But, you know, we're voting for America, not the person, and what the best policies are. So that's what I tell Christians. I've read that 51 million Christians in this country are considering not voting at all, and 32 million of them are people who regularly attend church. And I say that is really disturbing, because that can mean the difference between a successful election campaign and at least holding off these forces of the far left, because they're backed by the media, academia, and very powerful corporate interests like what they're doing, and basically bringing America down. And versus turning the country over to her and her minions, and whatever we had under Biden is going to be more of the same, except a lot worse. And as far as the religious aspect of it, the previous caller talking about prophecy, America is not present anywhere in end times prophecy in the Bible. It's just simply not there. Yet we're a covenant nation. I can go into that at some length at some point. The things that happened after they George Washington became the first president, after they ratified the new Constitution, what they did on Ground Zero, where the World Trade Center was, there's a chapel there. They all went down there and prayed and dedicated the new nation to God, made some statements committing this country, and we did pretty good for the first 100 or so years. We kind of lost our way since then. A lot of things have happened, and I never dreamed that I would see the kind of stuff that I see. I never dreamed when I would see drag queen story hour in libraries for kindergarten kids. I've got pictures of this, and the costumes these people wear would scare me on Halloween if I opened the door and saw them there, let alone showing to small children. What kind of parents take their kids to something like that? What kind of people have we become that we think that's okay? But that's where we're at. And if you think that's bad and you tell people about it, you're going to be labeled as a bad guy. Now, I don't care. I'm in my 70s, and too bad. You can call me whatever name you want. It doesn't bother me. But a lot of people are afraid to speak up, and I'm really disappointed a lot of the churches in this country are not speaking up. You know, when Adolf Hitler took power in 1933, some people thought he'd be okay. A guy named Dietrich Bonhoeffer said, this guy is not going to be okay. He is a really bad man, and he tried to get pastors and people in the churches in Germany, which is pretty much a state church, to wake up. Well, they didn't. Now, there are about 1,000 evangelical fundamentalist kind of Christians that kind of stood up to Hitler. They wound up in concentration camps, but the bulk of the churches in Germany, the state church and everybody else, the mainline churches, went along. And by 1938, just 5 years after Hitler received total power in January of 1933 as a chancellor as well as the Führer. When he had total power from that date until 1938, 5 years, the crosses on churches have been replaced by swastikas, and the doctrines that are in the Bible for Christian churches have been replaced by new Nazi doctrine. So the Christian churches did not support Nazism. Nazism basically swallowed the Christian church in Germany whole, except for those that were true to the gospel and basically stood up against Hitler. Of course, they wound up in death camps. Dietrich Bonhoeffer was executed by the Nazis less than a month before the end of the war in Europe, along with a lot of other people who stood up. But they were a minority. They were a minority, and that's a really sad thing. Anyway, we got the music coming on again, and we'll be back in a few minutes. Give us a call back as soon as we come back up. Come on, you gotta go out.
This Fox Business News update on KPRL is brought to you by Stifel, your full-service wealth management firm since 1890. Stifel, located at 1337 Vine Street in Paso Robles. Call 805-238-3080. Stifel, 238-3080.
I'm Susan Lee, and this is the Fox Business Report.
Stocks ending mixed, with the Dow suffering its fifth straight session of losses as investors reviewed a new batch of earnings reports. The Dow and S&P 500 ending the week with losses and snapping a six-week winning streak. Tech stocks gained today as bond yields fell while industrials lagged. Most of the so-called Magnificent Seven group of tech stocks rallied. Chip heavyweight Nvidia rose 1% and briefly surpassed Apple as the world's most valuable company. And shares of Tesla rose 3% after rising 22% on Thursday for its best one-day gain in more than 11 years, following better-than-expected quarterly earnings and operating profit margins. The Dow winners, Microsoft, Salesforce, and United Health Group. The Dow decliners, Home Depot, McDonald's, and Travelers. The Dow falling 260 points, the Nasdaq up 103, S&P 500 down 2. That's your Fox Business Report. I'm Hillary Barsky, invested in you.
With Cybersecurity Awareness Month winding down, LifeLock wants to remind you to update your software. These updates are used to patch up security issues that identity thieves can exploit to gain access to your personal info. But for comprehensive identity theft protection, there's LifeLock. LifeLock alerts you to more uses of your personal info and fixes identity theft issues that arise. Start your 30-day free trial at LifeLock.com. Use my name as your promo code, Clay.
This Fox Business News update on KPRL brought to you by Stifel, your full-service wealth management firm since 1890. Stifel, located at 1337 Vine Street in Paso Robles. Call 805-238-3080. Stifel, 238-3080.
Driven to be the best.
The veteran-owned Ted Miles Motors in Atascadero.
The cars you want, the people you like.
Serving you for 49 consecutive years.
Just plain good deals without the hype.
Ted Miles Motors, same location since 1975.
Selling cars the way it should be done. And giving you service that's second to none.
Driven to be the best.
Ted Miles Motors, in business for 49 years, has sold over 13,000 vehicles and is the longest established used car dealer in San Luis Obispo County. So whether buying or selling a car, truck, van, SUV, motorhome, or classic car, visit their easy-to-navigate website, TedMilesMotors.com, or their showroom, 7380 El Camino Real in Atascadero, next to Farrell's Auto Repair.
Driven to be the best!
Ted Miles Motors, Atascadero.
The sound-off lines are open at 238-5775. 238-KPRL. The North County's listening to you on Sound Off.
Okay, we're back, and the lines are open, 238-5775. Give me a call. Let me know what's on your mind today. You know, I'm talking about some of the smears out there against Trump. I didn't get a chance to talk about this one last week when I was on the air, but they had a Trump boat parade down in Florida, and a boat with five individuals, three wearing masks, flew swastika flags and Trump flags during a pro-Trump boat parade. According to Newsweek, these are typical Trump supporters, represented the kind of people that support him. However, what they don't tell you about in the Newsweek articles is that other Trump supporters and other boats got up, showered water all over the boats, which are Nazi goons, as they call themselves, and some people believe they're Antifa thugs. You know, the people who really truly supported Trump were very angry at these people. They did not represent Trump or his supporters. But Newsweek, of course, didn't bother to report that fact, that Trump supporters made sure that these guys did not represent Trump at all. We got a call. Let's go to the phones. Hi, you're on the air. Hello?
Hello,
you're on the air.
Sir. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can. Go ahead.
Oh, okay, I don't have that great a connection. Anyway, I'll make it brief. I believe that some of those Christians that you were talking about that were refusing to vote or won't vote were probably influenced by the New World Order, Illuminati people, and thinking somehow or other maybe Trump is an antichrist, which is all a bunch of horse crap. And, you know, that kind of stuff carries a lot of weight with some of those extremists in that group. Other than that, I can't think of anything else. But
okay.
I know that Trump is really for our country because he took that bullet to the ear, and that was planned. That was all tried to be set up and didn't work. So nonetheless, he's not playing ball with the the swamp, so to speak, deep or not, with Kamala Harris and such. And so that's why it's happening to him. He'll eventually probably get killed, or even during office or after office, but he'll give his life for this country, and he doesn't mind.
Well, I hope not. But you know what I think is possibly going to happen after the election? If he wins the election, and there's no question that he won the election, and what's coming up in before Thanksgiving is he's due for sentencing in New York State. And I think that state court judge will probably sentence him to jail and then say, no, you're not going to be remain out on bail, which is customary until appeals are done. You're going to jail right now to keep him from being able to be sworn in as president. These people on the left are so adamant, from the president of the United States down. Remember, Biden just said last week, we've got to stop him, whatever it takes, you know, politically, you know, and what he caught himself there real quick. But the bottom line is, I think they'll use every device in their power to keep him from being sworn in office. And
right.
Assassination
right.
is not off the table. They'll do whatever they can. If that doesn't work, they'll do something else.
No, you're absolutely correct. But he is with us that believe in our country's ways, but so be it. He'll have to pay a price one way or the other, and he's lived a magnanimous life. So I'll let someone else call in. Thank you very much
okay.
for your time.
All right. Well, thank you. You recall, you know, that's a real, you know, there's people have a lot of reasons for not voting, from I don't want to have jury duty to I don't like the guy's comments and things like that. And, you know, it's really a sad thing because, you know, during the American Revolution, you had ministers stood up and were counted. They basically stood up and said, this is not right what's happening, people. People were being, women being molested and assaulted in the streets, and the British soldiers who did these things were not being held accountable, being shipped back to England for trial, or not even tried at all. Anybody who defended them was shipped to England and given a kangaroo court and sentenced to long prison sentences and prisons and dungeons and hulks and things like that. And people are angry. And the minister stood up and said, it's time to be counted. And one of them stood up and he pulled off his preacher's robes and he had the uniform of a Continental Army officer on there. Ministers were so effective in the American Revolution that General Gage called them Washington's Black Robe Regiment, that basically led the revolution and inspired the people. And basically, his best recruiter that he had were the churches, because the churches played a central role in American culture and daily life in those days. It's the kind of thing that people don't really know about because they don't tell you. They don't tell you in school anymore. They don't teach you very much of American history at all. And I'm not sure if I have a call waiting or not. I'm trying to read my computer here. But until I find out for certain, I'm going to talk about General Kelly Smear. Oh, we do have a call waiting, so I'm going to go to the phones. Hi, you're on the air.
Hey, good afternoon, Al. I was just going to chime in on John Kelly. So John Kelly was either former Trump's White House chief of staff,
right,
the former Secretary of Defense. So in the 11th hour of this presidential election, this guy steps out and starts making accusations that, you know, Trump is praising Hitler and Hitler's generals and all the other stuff. So, you know, like you were saying before, that the deep state swamp, you know, politicians, they're going all out. Any line of offense to take him out, and you have leftists backing all of this up, even to the extent now with you've got civilians calling out friends, family, and neighbors, pointing fingers and calling people Nazis, and that they're going to have to live with their choice, you know, forever. It's just unbelievable what is going down. And they're buying into all this stuff with Kelly stepping out now. So, what's your take on it, Al?
Well, I was just going to talk about that. I'm glad you brought it up. You know, what you got now is you got, Vice President Mike Pence. You know, he was not a great fan of Trump. He's not endorsing Trump. And his former chief of staff has now come out and said that Donald Trump did not say what Kelly said. He said he's refuting Kelly, saying, I've avoided commenting on the intra-staff leaks or rumors or even lies that relates to my time at the White House, but General Kelly's comments regarding President Trump are too egregious to ignore. I was with each of them more than most, and his commentary is patently false. He just called John Kelly a liar. So there it is right there. You know, you got this stuff. If this was such a big deal, then why didn't he come out 4 years ago? Why didn't he come out at the time of his resignation and say these things? He did not. He retired, went off to live his life, and now at the last minute he's coming out at the end of the campaign. Didn't say this in January. He's saying it less than 2 weeks before the election, he's coming out with this, the October surprise. This is a famous thing that, you know, political campaigns do. You know, they come out and they throw a smear that you don't really have time to refute because it gets out there, it gains traction. You're trying to refute it, get it on the air, and get people's minds made up. But now with voting occurring every day, before the normal election day, it's not what happens on November 5th. This is what happens on October 25th and 26th and 28th and 30th and everything else, because people are voting every day. It has an impact. Nancy Pelosi talks about this tactic, and she laughs about it. She thinks it's funny.
Right.
I don't think it's funny at all. But that's what you have. You know. Go ahead.
What burns me up, really, coming from a long line of Marines and military family. I've got two sons in the Marine Corps now. here's a former four-star general in the United States Marine Corps stepping out at the 11th hour of a presidential election. This is a guy who sworn oaths to protect the Constitution and national security, who's stepping out, as you said, years later and making these accusations. And why didn't he step out back then when Trump was under indictment and impeachment for all this other BS? It's just, it's so blatantly obvious that these people, they'll go to any length they can. I think they're worried and they're running because they're afraid that if Donald Trump becomes president again, that he's going to expose them for who knows what. But they're hiding from something, Al. They have to be.
They don't like his national security policies in many cases, but I think the honorable thing for a general to do after all those years of service, you know, John Kelly had pretty honorable service up until then. You know, he gets involved in politics. He's out of service now. He's a retired civilian, basically. He had a duty, if this was true, to stand up and say, Mr. President, I can no longer serve, and resign and make his statement publicly why he's resigning right then and there. And all the years that I've served and I've been watching, you know, how American generals operate, going all the way back probably to the Vietnam War, not one has stood up and resigned in protest over these policies. You know, colonels can resign and things like that. Lower-ranking generals can resign. General Singalab, you know, spoke up against Jimmy Carter, but he's only a major general. And I met General Singalab years ago, and he's a very honorable man. But it takes someone like a four-star general, an Army Chief of Staff, a Marine Corps Commandant, the Joint Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, to go up publicly and says, this has occurred. I cannot work in this administration. I cannot serve this officer anymore, this president any longer. I have submitted my resignation for these reasons. And then let the president deal with the political fallout. That's the honorable thing to do. Now, it's not a coup or anything like that. It's just saying if you've crossed a line like that, like these people says he has, then they have a duty to stand up and speak out. Not one has, not one. My opinion, most of these guys, these upper echelons, become very political after they get their third star. And they start looking at future careers and assignments and opportunities and the government, things like that. And they don't want to let it go, and they're not prepared to give up their career. Because ultimately, you know, we don't literally fall on swords, but that's the equivalent of what, you know, generals in the ancient days did when something was dishonorable. They would literally fall on their sword and commit suicide. We commit political suicide, we commit economic suicide or career suicide in the name of a virtuous cause. None of these guys have done it. To them, politics and their careers are more important than anything else. And it's disappointing with a guy like John Kelly because he served honorably until he got involved in the political aspects of the job. So,
well, he's tarnished his character and he's violated his oath to the Constitution and the security of this nation, in my opinion. And it's, you know, it's a sad day for other Marines and other servicemen to have that person in their shadow now, or shadowing over them, and there's some real integrity issues that have brought to light here. So it's just another fissure in the whole system, Al.
Well, that's why, you know, persons such as yourself, former Marines, active Marines have to be silent. You're wearing the uniform and active duty. You're not allowed to get engaged in politics. But when you take that uniform off and you turn to the civilian world, the world who does not serve, who's not served, only 0.5% of the population serves in the armed forces on active duty. That's not very much compared to what we had in World War II when like 12 to 15% of the country was actually in uniform. And my generation, you know, I grew up in the 1950s and served in the 1960s. The reality is that everybody served when I was growing up. I couldn't, you know, to find someone who was not a veteran of World War II of that age, you know, was almost impossible. Now, almost nobody serves. These people don't understand military or military life. It's important for veterans to speak out. Just like we did years ago, John Kerry was running for president, and the Swift Boat guys from Vietnam stood up and criticized him. Over 200 of them came out and called him out on the lies that he was telling about them and their service. And they were furious with him because he called them war criminals and everything else in front of Congress. And he did it for political purposes, and he still does it. He still does it. But that cost him the presidential election because veterans spoke out. And people says, oh, wait a minute. The veterans are speaking. Well, let's hear what they have to say. And it makes a big difference to people who have not worn the uniform. They need to hear from you and people like you. and how you feel about this. Anyway, okay, well, thank you very much for your call, and Semper Fi to your kids, and good luck to you. Hi, you're on the air. Hello.
Hello.
Yeah, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi. This is a quote by Samuel Adams, one of the founding fathers. It said, let each citizen remember at the moment he is offering his vote that he is not making a present or a compliment to please an individual, or at least that he ought not so to do, but that he is executing one of the most solemn trusts in human society for which he is accountable to God and his country.
Well said.
So I don't know if you've already heard that, but I thought I would read what Samuel Adams said. So all those Christians that don't want to vote, they're accountable to God and the country.
I agree, totally. And try to get the message out to people because, you know, a lot of people think, well, my vote doesn't count, or they come up with all kinds of reasons. I don't like the way he talks or this. You're not voting for the man so much as the policy, you know. Donald Trump was not my first choice in the primaries. There are other people that I would have preferred to have, but he is the person that the people chose, and the alternative is unthinkable. You know, I know Kamala Harris. I know what she's like. I'm from California. I watched her policies. I was involved in Republican politics in California for years, and then during the time when she was the attorney general and everything else, I saw what she did, and the horrible things that she and others like her have done to California is absolutely unspeakable, because that was once a very great state and a wonderful place to live, and unfortunately, she's turning it into a living hell for a lot of people in the middle class and certainly for the working class, and the policy they put in where it's no longer safe to be in the streets because of the kinds of things that they've implemented in her great years as a law enforcement officer, as she puts it. But you're right. You know, people need to go back and read what the founders had to say. They'll be kind of shocked at how religious they were, how profound their statements were, just like the one you just read. And I know I've heard it before. I couldn't quote it for you because I'm getting old and my memory's not like it used to be. But you know, people need to read the things that the founder said. Read some of the things that, I can't think of his first name. Bennett is his last name, but he's written a number of books about, you know, the United States and its founding and the things that people had to say and the quotes that some of these leaders had. We had a unique group of people come together in the 18th century during the 1700s to do the American Revolution, to make it work, to make it happen. And I don't think you'll find a pool of intellectual talent like that anywhere else in history at one time or one place with such a profound effect on the lives of millions of people to come to form a nation like the United States of America, and all the hope it offered so many millions of people over the centuries. I just hope we will continue to have a country a few years from now, because after Kamala Harris gets in and the things that she's done, and it's just appalling to me what's happening to this country. We got a break coming up. We got to go. We'll be back in a few minutes.
With all the changes in the auto industry these days, keeping up can be a challenge. So join me, Jimmy Purdy, on Gearhead Radio every Saturday at 9 a.m. I'm your go-to guy for all things automotive. Tune in as I share the latest advice and industry insights. Need help with your car? Call in and let's solve those car mysteries together. Here's the fun part. I'll share some of the hilarious mistakes I've made along the way, because let's face it, we've all got stories to tell. Gearhead Radio with me, Jimmy Purdy. It's not just a show, it's a community. Tune in this and every Saturday at 9 a.m.
As the markets have their ups and downs, real estate remains one of the most stable assets in everyone's portfolio. Hi, this is Cindy Mims, owner broker of Colony Mortgage, voted best mortgage company in North County 3 years running. We offer conventional FHA, VA, and reverse mortgages and 100% purchase loans for first-time home buyers. Are you a builder and tired of the red tape when dealing with banks and expensive hard money loans? I have a great new option. Or are you 62 years or older? You can possibly eliminate your monthly mortgage mortgage payment and get cash in your pocket. At Colony Mortgage, we have hometown service with competitive rates. We have years of experience with creative financing to find that right loan for you. If it's credit issues stopping you, let us help. We move from our 20-year Atascadero location and now offer two convenient locations to meet personally in Atascadero and Paso Robles. Call 805-466-3598. Thank you for supporting your local businesses.
Do you use propane for your home or business? Family-owned and operated Delta Liquid Energy has provided local area residents with dependable and courteous propane service since 1936. From home heating and cooking to powering your irrigation engine pump or forklift, propane can do it all. Don't forget their location, Paso Robles refills propane bottles of all sizes Monday through Friday and has a dump station for your RV. Learn more. Call Delta Liquid Energy, 805-239-0616, or go online, deltaliquidenergy.com.
Okay, we're back, and the phone lines are open, 238-5775. I'm talking a little bit about Harris's policies on illegals. What you can expect more of. Since she has been in office, along with President Biden, their policy, known as Quiet Amnesty, have basically allowed over 700,000 illegal aliens have had their cases dismissed, terminated, or administratively closed. They have profoundly changed this country. Now, they have let in over 10 million people, but 700,000 of them have already been adjudicated. Just let them go. Just let them go in the country. And they're going to do more of that because they'll realize nothing's going to stop. The American people gives her four more years to do the damage she's going to do, and the people she's going to be appointing are going to be just like Biden's, or probably a lot worse. Other things that are happening. You know, there's national security issues. You know, Russia's not our friend. You're not going to be able to deal with them too easily. They've got a military alliance going now with North Korea. North Korea has sent 1,500 special forces troops to train with Russia to use in the war against Ukraine. Now, I'm familiar with North Korean special forces, and they scare me. I mean, we went through briefings with them when I was an intelligence officer and what they were like, and we saw the bodies. And these guys are big. They're strong. They're mean. They don't give up. They're as bad as the Japanese were as far as being fanatical, the Japanese were in World War II. And the bottom line is that, you know, these people, if they fail in their mission and surrender, their families are executed. And those guys are the ones training now to go into Ukraine. Now, the other thing that's happened here is Russia is supplying satellite targeting data to the Iran-backed Houthi rebels based in Yemen, firing those missiles on Israel, firing them against Western cargo ships and tankers in the Gulf, in the Red Sea. So they're actively working against us as well in other ways. They're not exactly good partners for world peace. We have a caller waiting, and I'm going to go straight to the phones. Hi, you're on the air.
Hey, Al, thanks for taking my call. I came into the conversation kind of late, so I don't know if it was covered, but I was just kind of like reflecting on Kamala Harris saying that, you know, if she gets to be president, she's going to start attacking the price of food to where food is going to be coming down, and that she's going to reduce the cost of all the different commodities that we use each and every day. Well, then if that were true, she's had 4 years to have an influence on this administration and has done nothing.
Right. Well, the profit margin on groceries is 1-2%. How much are you going to cut?
Yeah. Yeah. And then, you know, you just got done touching on the Ukrainian war. I heard the other day, you know, about 300,000 Ukrainians, approximately 600,000 Russians have died. And I was thinking, during the Vietnam War, I think we lost close to a 250,000 servicemen.
We had 58,000 killed and about 180,000 wounded.
Okay, so about 200,000 altogether, huh?
Yeah, well over that, about close to 250,000 if you count killed, wounded, missing, things like that. You know, casualties total were about 250,000 Americans, you know, suffered in that war.
But, I mean, losing 600,000. In fact, the matter is the Russians don't have that good of demographics as far as, you know, replacement people.
No, they don't. Not anymore. I mean, the young men are running for their lives to get out of the country, hiding every which way they can, avoiding public transit so they don't get drafted, basically, by press gangs and pressed into the service. They're taking guys in their 40s, giving them about a month worth of training and throwing them out there. They had one guy, he has a wife and kids, and he thought the money would be good, so he went out. He had, I think, 3 weeks of training. They sent him to the front, and he was dead from the day that he joined to the day of his death was 6 weeks. That's how desperate they are. That's why they're bringing in foreign troops.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's getting really, really, really ugly. Not that it wasn't already. It is. So.
Yeah. So, you know, the amount of death is just staggering. I guess, you know, it goes along with the way Russia's always done it. They throw bodies out there, you know. During the American Revolution, I mean, between the North and South, we lost close to 650,000 men. And yet, during the Russian Revolution, they lost 11 million men. Yep. Unbelievable.
Yeah, I think they've lost. Russia does body counts in the millions. You know, we thought, you know, 400,000 in World War II, all theaters, all fronts for the United States. And when we were looking at the Japanese islands and the invasion of Japanese islands, you know, the intent was to get the Russians in the war as soon as possible in Manchuria to take out those 3.5 million Japanese troops there. And they'd also moved another 3 million troops from Manchuria into the home islands. So they actually had twice as many troops in the home islands as we thought. We thought we were going to lose a quarter million or more. We're probably going to lose 1 million to 2 million men more killed, not including wounded. And the war is going to go on for years. And the atomic bomb stopped that, of course, because the emperor said enough's enough. But yeah, the kind of level of casualties they've had, they lost millions of people before World War II started. They had 20 million dead in the course of the war. A good number of those were civilian, and they lost probably 10 million, 11 million combatant deaths in the Second World War. In the First World War, they lost millions more as well. I think 5 million was a combat death, but they also had starvation. They had 4 years of civil war and revolution after that. That killed millions of more people besides the Ukrainian famine. That killed 7 million. People. I mean, they probably depopulated about 30 to 40% of their population between 1920 and 1945. And that's how horrendous life in Russia was. It was brutal. We can't begin to understand casualties on that level. We've never experienced it except in the Civil War.
Yeah, so. Yeah. And you know, here it is, the replacement. It's in terms of demographics. They've lost a lot of their, you know, educated people, their engineers, all kinds of people have left Russia. This is going to put them in a vacuum for the next, you know, two generations at least.
Well, that's why Putin can't really quit. He's invested so much. If he were just to stop fighting at this point with no results like he's gotten, he'd be assassinated. He'd certainly be thrown out of office and probably thrown in prison, but he would probably more likely be assassinated, and someone more hardline than him would probably take his place. That's the real fear there.
I absolutely agree with that.
So, anyway. But,
it's beyond, well, those kind of numbers aren't replaceable. So, at this point in time, you've got China, which is basically our number one enemy. They're our number one enemy.
Yeah.
And
well, they say that.
You know,
even if we don't,
you know,
they say
the
it.
The American Civil War, it initiated all new kinds of warfare. We went from wooden ships to steel ships. We went from muskets to rifling. We went, it just escalated like we had never seen before. But you
became
know,
an industrial
what's happening
power.
In Ukraine has really surprised me, because these drones can render the best ships. I mean, the flagship of Russia was sunk by drones. And
well, they certainly provided the targeting
data.
Yeah,
leaves
yeah.
America with all our great big ships. That's a serious
situation. Well, it means you got to stand off and you got to develop new tactics. Drones is a major factor, as is artificial intelligence. The systems are outpacing our ability to adapt, and our armed forces right now are nowhere near as strong as they need to be for the level of threat that we're facing on multiple fronts. We have a very small military, you know, with the same level of commitments worldwide that we had when we had 2.5 a military almost 2.5 times larger than we have now, and It's taken its toll. The war on terror took its toll. The divorce rate in the military is about 75%. People are not reenlisting. They're down by thousands, tens of thousands of recruits. People are not re-upping. The legacy troops aren't coming back. The families aren't sending their kids to join the military, largely because of the policies of the Obama administration and now the Biden-Harris administration. People just don't want to put up with it. And I know a young man who was on the fast track to become a general, and he's retiring next year. He graduated in 2005, and what I've been told is he's leaving the military as a lieutenant colonel. And he was he was ranger instructor. He was an aide de camp to a general of a famous division. All these things, doing great. Multiple combat tours. And we're out of time. You got to go, folks. Thank you for your calls today, and we'll talk to you again next week. And have a great weekend. A great week.
This hour of Sound Off was brought to you by the Work Family Ranch, the perfect outdoor activity for any level rider. Book your horseback ride today, 805-467-3362, or go to workranch.com.
AM 1230 KPRL, 99.3 FM, KPRL.com, Paso Robles, Atascadero, Templeton.
It's 2.